Hello, everybody, and welcome. This is Lizzie and Justin, and we are turning towards life again on this fine Sunday in February 2025. And it's a total joy to sit down and to step into this space as usual. I want to say thank you for being here to everybody who's listening. Maybe you're listening in 2035, or maybe you're listening today on the 23rd of Feb, wherever you are, walking the dog, driving the car, doing the dishes, whatever you're doing, lying in bed, trying to go to sleep. Some people, Justin, really it helps them when they go to sleep, I think. And it's a real wonder to be here and to have this source, Justin, from David White, the wonderful David White, and to wander into this together and see what emerges today. Thank you, Justin, for choosing this source and for doing all the things that you do to make this happen.
It's wonderful to be here, Lizzie. Thank you. Hello, everyone. Very good to be doing this again. 380 something weeks in, and I'm feeling very glad that we do this and that we've been very faithful to it for all this time, and that so many other people are faithful to it too. So welcome to all of you, whether you've got faithful just to this one episode, or maybe you've been traveling alongside us for some time, or maybe you're one of the people who talks about this with your friends or with a study group or anything. So a reminder that you can find all the sources on our website, turningtowards.life. A source is the poem or reading that we're going to start this off with this morning, and I'll come to that in a second. So they're all on turningtowards.life. They're all in the show notes. They're all on Facebook. And if you feel so moved to, there are lots of things on our website, turningtowards.life, you can do. Like, you can sign up to get these as an email in your inbox. You can support us, which is always a joy when anybody reaches out our way in reciprocity and supports us. And you know that you're supporting us and supporting this just by taking part in it in whatever way you do as well. There was something else I was going to say, Lizzie, that I have completely forgotten what it was. So if I remember, I'll say. So this source this week is by the really extraordinary poet David White. Lizzie, you and I were talking about how we had the sense that we must have had David's work more often than we think we have had on this, because he's an endless source of depth and wonder. And I think probably rightly, we've brought his poems a few times, but not 384 times. We've had lots and lots of other sources, and it feels very good to be coming back to him again today. So this is a poem by David called All the True Vows. And you can find it in all the places that I just said. And we'll do the thing that we always do, is we'll both read it. All the True Vows. All the true vows. Our secret vows. The ones we speak out loud are the ones we break. There is only one life you can call your own, and 1,000 others you can call by any name you want. Hold to the truth you make every day with your own body. Don't turn your face away. Hold to your own truth at the center of the image you were born with. Those who do not understand their destiny will never understand the friends they've made, nor the work they have chosen, nor the one life that waits beyond all the others. By the lake, in the wood, in the shadows, you can whisper that truth to the quiet reflection you see in the water. Whatever you hear from the water, remember, it wants you to carry the sound of its truth on your lips. Remember, in this place, no one can hear you. And out of the silence, you can make a promise it will kill you to break. That way, you'll find what is real and what is not. I know what I'm saying. Time almost forsook me and I looked again. Seeing my reflection, I broke a promise and spoke for the first time after all these years in my own voice, before it was too late to turn my face again.
Thank you, Justin. All the true vows are secret vows. The ones we speak out loud are the ones we break. There is only one life you can call your own, and 1,000 others you can call by any name you want. Hold to the truth you make, every day with your own body. Don't turn your face away. Hold to your own truth at the centre of the image you were born with. Those who do not understand their destiny will never understand the friends they have made, nor the work they have chosen, nor the one life that waits beyond all the others. By the lake, in the wood, in the shadows, you can whisper that truth to the quiet reflection you see in the water. Whatever you hear from the water, remember, it wants you to carry the sound of its truth on your lips. Remember, in this place, no one can hear you. And out of the silence, you can make a promise it will kill you to break. That way, you'll find what is real and what is not. I know what I'm saying. Time almost forsook me and I looked again. Seeing my reflection, I broke a promise and spoke for the first time after all these years in my own voice, before it was too late to turn my face again.
Thank you, Lizzie. I was walking in the woods near where I live this week, and there is a lake just like this up in the top of the woods, surrounded by trees, and very often there's no one there. And I found myself reaching for this poem whilst I was by the lake, and it seems to me it's one thing to find out the truth of a poem by reading it, and then there's another one is to sort of do what it says. So I thought what I would do is stand by the lake, find my own reflection in the water, read David White's words, and then see what it was that there was to say. And I found myself saying things about myself and about my life that I don't think I often say anywhere. I don't say to other people, and I don't say to myself that often. And I noticed how two things. One was how many layers of adjusting to other people I had to undo in order to get to that. It was really striking to go, oh, look at that. Look how much, I don't know if this is true of anyone else, but I'm guessing it is. Look how much sort of moving backwards and forwards I do to find the right words that I feel like I can say when I'm with other people. That's not always the truest thing. It might be true, but it's not always the truest thing. And then even by myself, by the lake, I had to do quite a lot of sort of peeling back. Like, is that true what I'm saying? Maybe that's not the truest thing. Is that true? What I found, which I always find, is that my body knows what's true. When I say something that's, when I find words that really correspond to something that's inside me or something I'm committed to, Lizzie, it feels like when the key in a door turns and that moment where all the cogs on the inside move and there's like a shift so the door can open, it feels like that. And I get reminded that my body knows what's true about, not always about the world, for sure, but about me. My body knows what's true long before anything of me knows what's true, and certainly long before any of the parts of me that are up to their dance of accommodation and fitting in and looking all right that goes on with other people. And it's so good to find that quiet place where something is really true. And I suppose my first words of appreciation for David's words here is a reminder of how important that is. That although there's all this necessary accommodation we make to one another, Of course we do, because we care about who we're with and we want to belong. I'm not for a moment dismissing any of that, its relevance and importance and the care that can be behind it. I also want to I want to be reminded not to turn away from the kinds of this line that David says, and this is where you'll find what's real and what's not. We need that too. And there's lots more to say about why we need it. But first of all, I think we humans really need to find out that kind of truth.
Mm. Yeah, I'm really appreciating this invitation to realness and relating it to the life that I call my own. So what's real to me in my own life is a very different something than what becomes real when I'm trying to live lives that aren't mine, really. And so I'm appreciating this call to what's mine, really, you know, holding to the truth that I make every day with my own body. It's reminding me, Justin, of someone said to me once, if you want to know what someone's committed to, watch what they do, not watch what they say. And you might be unconsciously committed to stuff, or you might be consciously committed to stuff. We're all probably lots of the things at once. But the kind of, I think what we're talking about here is a kind of conscious commitment to what's my life, not a life that I'm supposed to be living, or a life that, I don't know, there's something about being called to make the distinction between my life and all the other lives I could call my own, but they're not really mine. And how powerful that kind of singularity feels to me. What's mine and what's not mine feels a very excellent question. What does my life look like? Not what does the life that I think I should have look like? What does it actually just look like? What is it? What am I making? What am I making here every day? And then I can see whether that fits with what I'm intending to make, or whether it's really different than that. And then in amongst that, feeling what real might be. What is realness? How do I know what feels real? And, you know, you're pointing me into the bodiliness of realness. It's such a great gift. I feel grateful that there is a way of discerning what's real for me and what's mine, because I think it sometimes feels very elusive. You know, I feel like my conditioning, the way that life has us in its grips, can sometimes feel like I'm doing the right thing, I'm doing the thing I should be doing, and us feeling like I don't really want to be here. You know, there's these voices, there's these parts that are present in different moments that are kind of calling to this invitation of David's. And I'm just experiencing how grateful I am for those dissonant voices that show me where I'm not supposed to be, show me where I'm not, where it's not mine. But then I'm also appreciating the courage that it takes to say no to things and yes to things. I was in a conversation yesterday, Justin, about friendships and how we can grow out of them. And, you know, when you're in something and you're going, oh, goodness, this doesn't feel like it's for me anymore. But what a kerfuffle to kind of declare this as a stopped friendship or something. And sometimes that has to happen. And I can feel so many times where I've outgrown something, or it just doesn't, the conversations don't seem to be ones that matter to me anymore, or they never mattered in the first place, but I was too scared to admit it or something. And so this sense of the vows that we make inside and what feels true to them both belongs in what I do, who I'm with, where I go, what I invest in. And it feels really welcome and brilliant that David knows how to invite us into this so that we're actually asking some really good and powerful questions in service of us living the one life that is mine, that is yours, that is anyone's. And I want to just thank him for saying that in this powerful way to all of us.
I'm very struck by your language of discernment and distinguishing, Lizzie, which is also so clearly reflected in this poem. And what struck me as you were talking, I was thinking about your example about friendships that end, for example, which is, at least it's my experience, that to find out whether that's the case, what's the way I want to say this? It's a funny way to say this. I think I might have to say this a couple of times and kind of circle around it. But the first way to say it is almost something like, sometimes I can be the last to know about something that's really true for me because I haven't paid attention to it.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm caught up in the, I might be caught up in the public stories about something, like a friendship that had once been very rich and very life-giving, or like you say, maybe a friendship that never really belonged. But I've come to believe the cover story more than I've believed or known about a deeper story. And there's a book I've begun reading again recently the author's just escaped me for the moment, but it's called Strangers to Ourselves. And it's about the disciplines of self-observation and paying attention to this one life. And what I think David is showing us and you're showing us and the author of that book shows is that it's quite easy. There is this undercurrent of something truthful that runs through us all the time, but it doesn't mean we're always paying attention to it. It doesn't mean we always really know about it. Well, we do if we'll create conditions for it, if we'll get ourselves somewhere quiet. What it is that David says, remember, in this place no one can hear you, and out of the silence you can make a promise that it will kill you to break. The really truthful promise is possible to make there. But quite a lot of the time, for all kinds of very good reasons, we're bobbing about far away from that. And it seems to me a matter of principle that there is a one life, Lizzie, that's yours, that you get to live because you're the one that you are, and you are like everyone else and also unlike everyone else, because it's you and your body in this place and this time, and there's me and my body in this place and this time, and my life is distinct from. So it's an act of sacred attention and care to see if we can discern and disentangle from all of the expectations and stories and defenses and protections and everything, see if we can discern what's really true. And I've watched, I was in a conversation a couple of days ago, Lizzie, we had a group of graduates of the Third Space professional coaching course, and we were studying together, and we ended up talking about death and the process of being alongside people as they die. And in a way, we got into this conversation about, sometimes for any of us who've ever experienced that, we occasionally see somebody at the end of their life getting really in contact with this truth, and what a relief it is to find your way back to it. And it takes a sort of an unpeeling of a lot in order to find it. And there can be something, it doesn't always happen, but when it does, there's something sort of translucent about a person as they find their way back to a central truth. And David's invitation is to see if we can find it whilst we're alive. Because, and this is the line that always really sort of reaches me so deeply, and I just need to search for it, there's only one life you can call your own. There's a thousand others you could live that you can call by any name you want. And in a way, it doesn't even, I think the simplistic way of reading that would be, well, that should determine your career and your whatever. Yeah, maybe. Maybe it really should do who your friends are and everything. But the first place is to see if we can find out what it is. Like the first do is to bring ourselves close enough in contact with what's true, this one life that is coursing through us under the undercurrents, the undercurrent that flows underneath all of the surface things, is to bring ourselves in contact. And from there is the place that we can entertain the risk of making promises about our lives that it would really kill us to break.
Mm-hmm.
The promises we make from other places, the ones we speak out loud often, they are the ones that we break because they don't matter or mean as much as the ones that we find from the central truthful place.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the invitation here, is to see if we can live a truthful life where the promises we make, the yeses and nos that we say, we really mean.
Yeah. And it's such a process, isn't it? Because I can see places where I said a really true yes. And now when I look back, to me now, it's not a true yes.
Mm.
And so I'm noticing also wherever we're at in our process, this means something different. Wherever we're at in our unfolding, this can mean very, very different things in the same choice. You know, when I'm asked about something now, given all that's happened, and I would have been asked the same thing when I was however old in the past, the answer seems to change all the time, which I guess really I love about this kind of poem, is that it's relevant wherever we are in the process of our unfolding development of becoming. And this question of what is my life? There's only one life I can call my own, is true at any point. It's not like that there's one life that I should have chosen when I was 20, or I should have chosen when I was 30 or something. Like, it's not an abstract life. It's in the moment, it's in the present. What is mine now? What is mine now? And what is mine now? And so bringing back this poem again and again as a kind of a reminder and a call to this being an ever living orientation to life, to keep choosing to be in the choice consciously and wonder what that really means. A little bit like we're saying in the context of friendships and relationships. They can become something that they weren't before, not because of them, the relationship itself changing, but because we change. There's something about us that suddenly goes, oh gosh, that's not the conversation I need to have anymore. I've got different needs. I've got different wishes. I've got different desires. I've got different things that have to be attended to that can't happen here. Unless they can, unless we can both work out what that is and what that feels like to do that. And so this question of what's mine, what belongs to me and where do I belong, feels like an ever-evolving, curious wondering. And again, Justin, this appreciation in me arises of the kind of spaces that we make, like this space, where we can keep asking the question, that occasion never disappears too far from us, where you go to a lake and ask yourself some questions, and we gather here and talk about a poem and sit in a room and wonder about dying and death and what that really is. And more those spaces feel like the nourishment, the self-care, the realness that belongs certainly to me in my life. It just feels like the elixir that makes being human, like you were saying about when your body kind of knows where you are and what's good for it. My bodily response to being in community and being in conversation and being real about life and being disclosive and sharing and learning together the kind of joy and aliveness that arises in me from doing that feels like it's a no-brainer, that it aligns with this original face that Dave is talking about, that it's something to do with where I know I'm supposed to be there because of how it feels.
It was at one point, Lizzie, a couple of days ago when I was hosting this group, someone in the group said this marvelous thing. We were talking about truthfulness and death and love and longing, and they said, I don't think we should be talking about this. Not like we shouldn't be talking about it, but it was a reflection on how hard it is a lot of the time to talk about this truthful undercurrent. So much of the time in our lives, I think for all kinds of understandable reasons, and that we need spaces where we can, you know, buy the shopping and wash the dishes and all of that kind of stuff. And we also need spaces to do this, like you're saying. It's such a relief. It's so important to recognize that there is, that we're so much more than just surface, us humans. We're depth as well. And I really, it occurred to me to say, whilst you were just talking, that one of the things that David's inviting us into is to recognize, actually, when you were talking about friendships and you were saying maybe this friendship is right, or maybe it's not, or maybe it was, or maybe that we have to do quite a lot of revision to find this out. We have to be prepared to make a lot of promises that feel like they're the true ones, and then find out that what we said wasn't quite what we meant, or that it had changed. And to keep on going and to be able to say, so for example, to end a friendship, which is tender and painful and difficult, but to be able to say, I think this part of my life is over, or this has changed, means breaking something that we might have been very committed to before. And that will show us that underneath there's a deeper promise yet to be made, and that there will be a scale of promises about our lives that breaking them would kill us, because they're the really true ones. But it can take years of talking and listening and opening and being welcomed and writing and speaking and thinking and feeling and practicing. And so I'm very, I suppose, what we're also doing in this long conversation, you and I, Lizzie, is keeping on spiraling round and inviting all of you who are with us to spiral round with us, because it's the motion here is a spiral, not a line from A to B, but a keeping on going round our lives. Maybe closer and closer and closer to that silence out of which we can make a promise it will kill us to break, where we find what's real and what's not. So, Lizzie, thank you as always for being in this conversation in the way that you are. And thank you, everyone, for being with us. We're so glad that you're here with us. And please feel very, very welcome to tell other people about this conversation if you think it would be of benefit to them. This Turning Towards Life creeps its way out into the world in wider and wider circles. It's wonderful to know that that happens. You can email us hello@turningtowards.life. You can visit us in our Facebook group, and you can come back next week if you want, where we'll have another source and another conversation coming your way. And next time, chosen by Lizzie.
Thanks, everyone.
Bye-bye, everyone.